I need more corporals, Helion announced to the night sky. She'd been sitting by the hearth, staring into the flames, but now she was on her back, beneath spinning stars. The world could change in an instant. Who decided things like that? One ain't enough. Ballsgird, you're now a corporal. You too, probably. It's maybe. No, I made up my mind.
And Belgrid.
That's what I said. As soon as the earthquake's over, we'll get right on it. Who am I missing? How many in my squad? Four of you, right? That last one. He's a corporal now, too. I want four corporals to take my orders.
What orders?
The ones I come up with. First off, you're all my bodyguards. I'm done with Skulldum. Keep him away from me. He's convinced you're royalty, Sergeant. And I am, Iffy. So you got to do what I say. Where my original corporal? Touchy Breath? You here?
Aye, Sergeant.
Yes, Sergeant.
I can't be looking at this mess any longer. Take me to my tent. No, quit that. Don't help me up, you idiots. Take my feet. Nice and slow now. Ow! Who put rocks under me? Corporal Marble, clear them rocks, will you? Gods, where's my tent? Letharus?
We're looking, Sergeant. Didn't you put it up?
Me? You're my corporal. That was your job.
Hold on, Sergeant. Just rest here. We're on it.
So I should think. Dereliction of duty. Give me a wax and a stick, someone. Gotta write you up. I'm busting you down to under-corporal. What's that pounding?
Putting the stakes down, Sergeant. Not long now.
Hey, look at those green things in the sky. Who put those there? Get rid of them!
Wish I could, Sergeant.
You're now an under-corporal for disobeying honours. Orners. Oars. Udders. Hold on.
She rolled onto her side and was sick, but in a lazy way.
Orders? Hey, where are you dragging me to? I wasn't done there. Something's in the sky. I saw it. Cut right across those greens. Saw it, corporals. You listening? Big wings. I saw... Oh, whatever. Someone's in trouble. But it ain't me. Check that tent now. No spiders allowed. Stupid stars. How'd they get in here?
Gessler brought the lantern close.
Look at that, will you? One of Bottle's rats did that, I bet. Chewed right through the hood-damned strap. If I catch him, I'm going to twist his tiny head right off.
The rat or Bottle? Stormy asked.
Either. Both. I knew it was hanging funny, down on one shoulder.
Aye, Stormy said. You looked ridiculous, lopsided, like some green recruit ain't figured out how to wear the sling work.
Gessler glared across at his corporal.
And you didn't say nothing all day. Some friend you are. What if I got snot smeared across half my face? You just going to stand there?
Count on it, Stormy said. Assuming I can keep a straight face.
Next time I see you with bark hair hanging from your back end, I ain't saying a thing.
Pays to check twice. I learned that much. Think we should go find Flashwit? She's way overdue.
Send Mayfly and Shortnose.
You can't be serious.
Gessler paused in his tugging loose the chewed-through strap.
Huh. Right. Off you go, then.
Sure you don't need any help there?
No, you done too much already.
That's just it. I'm all wore out, Guess. I'm too old to march the way we're marching right now. I'll be walking on stumpy knees if this goes on much longer.
Thus matching your intellectual height. Know what your problem is, Stormy? You've gone all edgy.
The huge Falari snorted.
Guess... We just saw 100 or so squad mages fall out of line, leaking every which way, eyes rolling up inside their skulls, kicking and gagging. and our scary high mage reeled like a damned drunk and nearly brained himself on a wagon's edge. Fid lost his last 5 meals.
None of that's got anything to do with you going round saying someone's spying on us, Stormy.
I'm just telling you what I'm feeling, that's all. Like an itch between my shoulder blades, you know the kind. And it's only got worse since whatever happened.
Fid said you're just imagining things.
No, he didn't. He didn't say anything. He wouldn't even meet my eyes. You were there, you saw.
Well, maybe he didn't say anything, but then he didn't have to.
I've been having strange dreams, Guess.
So?
Stuff falling out of the sky. I look up and I'm right under it, and there's no way to escape. Can't run far enough or fast enough. Can't do anything except watch it come down on me.
He leaned forward and slapped his hand on the ground, making Gessler jump.
Like that? You'd think I'd wake up then. But I don't. I just lie there, crushed, feeling all that weight. Can't move a muscle. Can't even breathe.
Gessler tossed down his hauberk and harness.
Stand up, Stormy. You're coming with me.
Where?
Walk, Corporal. It's an order.
Gessler led Stormy through the camp, passing cook fires with their huddled, muttering circles of soldiers. They threaded through the cutter's station, where weary healers worked on soldiers suffering blistered feet, ankle sprains and whatnot, and then out past the first of the horse corrals. Ahead was a trio of laden wagons, an oversized carriage and 15 or so tents. Gessler called out as they approached.
Hedge!
A figure came round one end of the carriage and walked over.
Gessler? You deserting the bone hunters? Come to join the bridge burners? Smart lads. The legend's right here and nowhere else. I got these soldiers stepping smart, but they could do with your learning, and that's a fact. Enough of the rubbish, Gessler said. Where's your two beauties? Oh, Gessler, they're beat, honest. Wake 'em up, both of them. Stormy here's got a need. You've got a need, you mean? No, both of them for him. By the time I come to collect my corporal, I want this man's rope so stretched it's tangled round his ankles. I want to see bludgeoned bliss in his tiny blue eyes and curly black hairs in his beard. Tell the lovelies I'll pay triple the going rate. Fine. Only you got to consider what I said. About deserting, I mean. Capital offence, Hedge. Unofficial transfer, then. Kenneb would never allow it. Fine. Then just march with my squads for a week or so. Alongside, like, right? Give 'em advice and stuff. Advice?
Gessler snorted.
Like what? Don't die, soldiers. First hint of trouble, strap on and belt up. Your weapon's the thing strapped to your web. How's that? That's perfect.
Hedge, what in Hood's name are you doing here?
The sapper glanced round and then grasped Stormy by an arm.
See those tents? Those big ones there? Go on, Corporal. Tell the lassies it's a special order.
Stormy scowled across at Gessler, who scowled back.
I never rolled with real fat women before.
Nothing like it, Hedge said. Get one under you and one over you, and it's all pillows. Go on, Stormy. Me and Guess got to talk.
Pillows, huh?
Aye. Nice warm pillows. Step smartly now, Corporal. There you go.
As the Ferrari trundled off, Hedge looked round suspiciously once more and then gestured for Gessler to follow.
Bottles using bats,
Hedge muttered as they walked away from the firelight.
Almost skewered one of his rats, you see, so now he's gone more cagey. What are you up to that's got him so curious, Hedge? Nothing, honest. Gods below, you're a bad liar. Just comes from being a legend, Guess, all that fawning and spying. You get used to it, so the precautions, they come natural now. All right, this will do.
They had walked a dozen or so paces past the ornate carriage, out beyond the faint glows from the fires, and then Hedge had led him into a circle of low stones, which Gessler assumed was an old teepee ring. They now stood within it.
"Bottle could use anything out here, Hedge." "No, he can't. I got my company maid to seal this circle. We do this every night for our staff meetings."
"Your what?"
"Me, my sergeants, corporals, and bevedict. Daily reports, right, to stay on top of things."
"What things?"
"Things. Now, listen. You heard anything yet about what happened earlier?"
Gessler shrugged.
"Some. There was a gate and someone came through it. Someone stinking with power."
Hedge was nodding and then he changed it to shaking his head.
"That's nothing. So some nasty's shown up. That means he's here in the real world. Anyone here in the real world can die from a damned rotten tooth or a knife or whatever. I ain't shaking in my boots, and if I have to, I'll kiss a quarrel's point and whisper the fool's name. A bolt in the eye can fuck up even a god's day. No, what really matters is what happened before he showed up."
"Go on."
"It's Hood."
"What about him?"
"Oh, right. You and he are best friends these days. Or bitter enemies. How does he take you coming back anyway?"
"Probably not well. But it don't matter anymore. I won."
"You won what?"
"I won.
The Harrow has gone and gotten killed. The god of death is dead. Head chopped right off. A carcass, but no grin. A bouncer down the hill, a roll and wobble and blink, a mouth mover, a hat stand."
"Hold on, Hedge. What? Who?
But that doesn't make sense. How?"
"I don't know and I don't care.
Details? Squat and shit on 'em. Hood's dead. Gone."
"But then, who's taking the throne?"
"Nobody and everybody."
Gessler's right hand twitched. Gods, how he wanted to punch this grinning fool. But that nose had seen a few dozen breaks already. He doubted Hedge would even notice.
"What?"
he said carefully.
"Do you mean, Hedge?" "I mean, there's a whole crew of 'em, holding the gate. Nothing's shaken out yet. It's all hazy. But one thing I can tell you, and you can ask Fid if you want. He won't say any different unless he lies to you. One thing, Guess, I can feel them. I can feel him."
Gessler stared at the man's glittering eyes.
"Who?" "The fallen bridge burners, Guess. And I, Whiskey Jack. It's him. I'd know that sour look anywhere, no matter how dark it is around him. He's astride a horse. He's in the gate, Gessler."
"Wait. That's who stepped through?"
"No, never mind that one. That one ain't got a thought that ain't 10,000 years out of touch. Different gate, anyway. I'm talking about Whiskey Jack. Go and die, Guess. And who'd you rather meet at the gate, Hood or Whiskey Jack?"
"So why ain't you cut your own throat, if you're so excited about it all?"
Hedge frowned.
"No reason to get all edgy. I was a sapper, remember? Sappers understand the importance of patience."
Gessler choked back a laugh. From the tents, someone squealed. He couldn't tell who.
"Laugh all you want. You'll be thankful enough when it's your head rolling up to that gate."
"I thought you hated worshipping anyone, Hedge."
"This is different, if you say so.
Now, anything else you wanted to tell me about?"
"Nothing you'd care about either way. You can hand over the coins now, though. Triple the going rate, right? Dig it out, Guess. It's getting late."
Commander Bryce threw on his cloak and fastened the breast clasp. "I walk through camp before settling in at Treseda. Join me, if you please."
"Honored, my prince."
He stepped out of the command tent and she followed. They set out for the nearest row of legionaries' tents. "That title just won't sit comfortably at Treseda," he said after a moment. "Commander or sir will do. In fact, when it's just the two of us, Bryce." She wondered if he caught her faint gasp, or noted the momentary wobble in her knees as she moved up alongside him. "Assuming," he continued, "you will permit me to call you Aranecht?"
"Of course, sir."
She hesitated, could feel him waiting, and then said,
"Bryce?"
A wave of lightheadedness followed, as if she'd quaffed a tumbler of brandy. Her mind spun wildly for a moment, and she drew a deep breath to calm herself. This was ridiculous, embarrassing, infuriating. She itched to light a smoker, but that would likely breach protocol. "At ease, Aranecht."
"Sir?"
"Relax. Please, you're starting to make me jumpy. I don't bite."
"Try the right nipple." "Oh, God, shut up, woman. Sorry."
"I was hoping your stay with the Malazan High Mage might have calmed you some."
"Oh, it has, sir. I mean, I'm better."
"No more fainting?"
"No. Well, almost once."
"What happened?"
"At day's end, I made the mistake of being in his tent when he pulled off his boots."
"Ah." And then he shot her a startled look, his face lighting in a sudden smile. "Remind me to send you out before I do the same."
"Oh, sir, I'm sure you don't... that is, it's not the same."
But he was laughing. She saw soldiers round campfires turn, looking over at the two of them. She saw a few muttered jests, and there were grins and nods. Her face burned hot as coals. "Aranecht, I assure you, after a day's fast march as we've been experiencing since the landing, my socks could stun a horse. None of us are any different in such matters."
"Because you choose to march alongside your soldiers, Bryce. When you could ride or even sit in one of the grand carriages, and no one would think ill of you."
"You would be wrong in that, Aranecht. Oh, they might not seem any different, outwardly, saluting as smartly as ever and all the rest. Certain to follow every order I give, yes. But somewhere deep inside every one of them, there's a stone of loyalty. When it comes to most of those giving them orders, that stone stays smooth and nothing sticks. It all washes off. And so it would be with me as well, were I to take any other path than the one they happen to be on. But, you see, there may come a time when I must demand of my soldiers something impossible. If the stone was still smooth, if it did not have my name carved deep into it, I could lose them."
"Sir, they would never mutiny."
"Not as such. But in asking for the impossible, I would intend that they succeed in achieving it. The impossible is not the same as sending them to their deaths. That I would never do. But if I am to ask more of them than any commander has even the right to ask of his or her soldiers, then I must be with them, and be seen to be with them. Tonight," he continued, "you must become my Atreceda again for a time, and I your commander. When we speak with our soldiers, when we ask them how they fare on this day, when we endeavour to answer their questions and concerns as best we can." He paused, his steps slowing. They were in a gap of relative darkness between two cook fires. "Especially on this night," he said, his tone low. "They are shaken. Words come of the afflictions striking the Malazan mages."
"Yes, Commander, I understand. In fact, High Mage Delat wondered, rather, he asked me, about you. Said that you may seem different now, sir."
"And what will you tell him when next you two meet?"
I'm not sure, sir. I think so. Maybe."
"He is a clever man," Bryce said. "This evening, Aranecht, I felt as if, well, as if I had awakened, stepped out from a dark, cold place. A place I'd thought was the real world, the honest world. The coldness I'd thought was simply what I had never before noticed, before my death and resurrection, I mean. But I understand now that the cold and darkness were within me, death's own touch upon my soul." She stared at him, adoring, eyes bright.
"And it is gone now, sir?"
His returning smile was all the answer she needed. "Now, Atreceda, let us speak with our soldiers."
"Carving the stone, sir."
"Just that."
"No need to worry about mine. I am yours. That stone, it's all melted, reshaped. Erend, save me. It's got your face now. Oh, and about that biting.
As they stepped into the firelight, Bryce chanced to glance across at his Atreseda, and what he saw in her expression, quickly veiled but not quickly enough, almost took his breath away. Lascivious hunger, a half-smile upon her lips, a fancy snared in the reflecting flames in her eyes. For an instant he was at a loss for words and could only smile his greeting as the soldiers turned and voiced their heartfelt welcome.
Erenicht, I truly was half dead inside, to have so thoroughly missed what is now so obvious. The question now is, what am I to do about it? About you? That look, there was a darkness upon it, not cold as I found in myself, but hot as a burning ember. Is it any wonder I so often see you standing inside swirls of smoke? Atreseda, what am I to do?
But he knew he would have no answer to that question, not until he knew his own feelings. It all seemed so new, so peculiar, so unfamiliar. All at once, and he felt the shift with a grinding lurch, she was the one standing so self-possessed and content inside her own inner world's visions, whatever they happened to be, while he stood awkwardly at her side, flustered, dumbstruck. Ridiculous. Set it aside for later, Bryce. This soldiering business was getting easier, Sunrise decided. Plenty of marching, and marching fast at that, but the soles of his feet had toughened. He'd got his wind back, and even carrying his armor, shield, and weapons wasn't proving so hard anymore. They'd even found time for some sword practice.
Duck and stab, duck and stab. Hold the shield up, soldier. Hold the line. No one breaks in the bridge burners. You stand and take the shock, and then you step forward. Stand, take, step. It's like felling a forest, soldiers, tree by tree. Duck and stab.
Couldn't help but be a bit of a challenge, of course, living up to the legend that was the bridge burners. But then they had themselves a real one looking on, all sharp-eyed and stern. And that kept everyone trying and trying hard. High standards, aye, the highest. The bridge burners had single-handedly won the Black Dog campaign, sent the Crimson Guard and the Mott and Genabari legions reeling in retreat, kicked in the front gates of a dozen cities from Nathelog to One-Eye Cat. And before that, they'd conquered all of Seven Cities. He'd never heard of any of these places, but he liked the names. Seven Cities sounded simple and obvious. Place got seven cities? Call it Seven Cities. Straight thinking, that was. And all that Jennabarkin stuff, well, those names were amazing and exotic. Cities called Pale and Grey Dog, Tulips and Bulge. And then there were the wonderful beasts in those distant lands, dragonflies big enough to ride. Imagine whizzing through the clouds, looking down on everything, seeing how beautiful it all was, and then dropping hundreds of bombs on it. And the bridge burners had done all that, and, more importantly, they weren't done yet. More adventures were coming, glories and heroic defences, monsters in the sky and flooded deserts and ghosts with sharp swords and warriors made of dust, Moranth and Bargast and Tist Andi and Jagut Tyrants and all the rest. Sunrise couldn't wait to get to the legendary stuff. It's what he was meant for, what his whole life was heading towards, as if he'd only been waiting for these foreign soldiers to arrive, to sweep him up and carry him along, and now he was one of them. And he knew the others felt the same.
We're bridge burners now. They'll look to us when things get desperate, too desperate for the others to handle. We'll march forward, shields locked, faces cold and with hearts of iron. We'll prove we're worthy of the legend. Wait and see. Just wait and see.
Two women stood well away from the fires, waiting for a third. There was nothing sure in this. In fact, Cinta reminded herself, it was almost guaranteeing trouble. There wasn't much sisterhood among the Dalhunnies. Scarce any brotherhood either, come to that. Tribes get left behind, and with them ties of the blood, feuds and all the rest. That was how it should be, and mostly they held to it, since to do otherwise could rip a company apart. Squads the new kin, companies the tribe, armies the people, the kingdom the damned empire.
What are you, soldier? Marine, 4th Squad, 3rd Company, Bonehunters, sir. Not Dalhanese? No, sir. Malazan? No, sir. Bonehunters, sir.
Now, if only she believed all that, there in that gnarled, hard thing at the centre of her being. Step up, aye, and mark it out with all the right attitudes. Diligence, discipline, loyalty. Don't blink at any damned order given, no matter how stupid or pointless. A tribe lived to keep itself alive, and keeping itself alive meant making sure everything was in order and working the way it should. Made sense to her, and it was worthy enough to believe in, especially when there was nothing else in sight to looking any better. So she'd wanted to believe. For herself and for her wayward, flighty sister. Steady enough for the both of them, aye. Kissware was going to stray. She was like that, it was in her nature. People like her needed understanding kin. The kind of kin who'd step in and clean up and set right what needed setting right. And Cinta had always held to that role.
Kissware bends, I stand firm. She slips out, I fill the gap. She makes a mess, I clean and set right. She lets people down, I pick them back up.
Sometimes, however, she chafed under the strictures of being ever reliable, solid and practical, of being so utterly capable. Just once, Kissware could take Cinta's cloak and hold fast, and Cinta could snag her sisters and go out and play. Stealing husbands, jilting lovers, signing on, fucking off. Why not? Why did all the expectation have to settle on her shoulders every damned time? She was, she realized, still waiting to start living. Badan Gruk wanted her, loved her, but she didn't know. If she wanted to be loved, or even chased after. She played it out, aye, as if it was all real. She even spent time telling herself it was the way it looked. But the truth was, she didn't know what she felt, not about him, not about anything. And wasn't that the real joke in all this? Everyone saw her as such a capable person, and all the while she asked herself,
capable of what? Will I ever find out? When is it my turn?
She had no idea what this army was doing, and that frightened her. Not that she'd ever give away her true feelings. Cinta saw how the others relied on her, even the other sergeants, Primly, Badan Gruk, even that cow-eyed fool Herb. No, she needed to keep playing the unimaginative soldier, biting her tongue and with that solid look in her eyes, not once wavering, not for an instant giving away the crazed storm in her head. She needed help. They were marching into blackness, a future profoundly unknown, barring the simple raw truth that at some point they would all draw their weapons, they would all stand facing an enemy that sought their annihilation. They would be told to fight, to kill.
But will we? Can we? If you could show us a cause, adjunct, a reason, just a handful of worth, we'd do as you ask. I know we would.
She glanced across at her sister. Kissware stood, a faint smile on her face to mark whatever inner peace and satisfaction she found so easy to indulge, her eyes on the blurry stars in the northern sky. Amused patience and the promise of derision. That was her most favoured expression, there on those deceptively sweet and innocent features. Yes, she was breathtaking in her natural beauty and charm, and there was that wild edge, sticky as honey, that so drew to her otherwise reasonable men. She froze lives and loves in amber, and her hoard was vast indeed.
Could I be like her? Could I live as she does? Look at that half-smile, so contented. Gods, how I wish!
There had to be a way out of this, and her sister had better find it soon, else Kissware feared she would go mad. She'd joined the Malazan Marines, for Hood's sake, not some renegade army marching up some damned god's ass. She'd joined knowing she could hand it all back to them once boredom forced the situation. Well, not that they'd happily let her go, of course, but disappearing wasn't so hard, not in a civilized land like the Malazan Empire. So many people, so many places to go, so many possible lives to assume. And even in the military itself, who really cared which face was which beneath the rim of the helm? Could be anyone, so long as they took orders and could march in step. She could have slept her way into some soft posting in Unter or Liheng or Kwan itself. Even Jenabakis would have been fine, if only her sister hadn't jammed her nose into things, always trying to take charge, constantly stepping into Kiswe's path and causing grief, complicating everything, and that had always been the problem. But Cinta hadn't figured it out yet. Kiswe had run to the Marines to escape her sister's infuriating interference in her life, among other things.
But she followed, didn't she? She followed, and so did Badan Gruk. It's not my choice, not my fault at all. I'm not responsible for them. They're all grown up, aren't they? So if I want to desert now, before we head into some place where I can't, well, that's my business, isn't it?
But now Cinta had dragged her out from the cozy fire, and here they were, waiting for one of Herb's soldiers, and what was all this about anyway?
Running. Is that it, finally? I hope so, sister. I hope you've finally come to your senses. This time I'm with you. But why this woman we hardly even know? Why not Badan Gruk? We got to get out, and now I got to get out, and I don't need anyone's help to do it. Stow away with a Duras trader. Easy, nothing to it. Two of us could do it, even three. But four? Now that's a stretch. It's logistics, sister, plain and simple. The kind you like so much. Straightforward. Too many and we'll get caught. You'll want Badan too, and four's too many.
She'd wait, however. She'd see what Cinta had in mind here, with this meeting. She could work on Cinta later, but nothing direct, since that never worked. Cinta was stubborn. She could dig in deeper than anyone Kiswe knew. No, Kiswe would have to twist carefully, so that the decision, when it finally went the right way, would seem to be coming from Cinta herself. It wasn't easy, but then Kiswe had had a lifetime of practice. She knew she could do it. Cinta softly grunted, and she turned to see a figure approaching from the camp, swaying hips and everywhere a whole lot of what men liked. A Dalhanese, for sure, which was why Cinta had invited her in the first place. But since when did three Dalhanese women agree about anything?
Madness. Cinta, this won't work. You remember the histories. It's us women who start most of the wars, snaring the wrong men, using them up, humiliating them, throwing one against another, whispering blood vengeance beneath the firs at night. A sly comment here, a look there. We've been in charge a long time, us women of Dalhon, and we're nothing but trouble.
Masangilani was from a savannah tribe. She was tall, making her curvaceous form all the more intimidating. She had the look of a woman who was too much for any man, and should a man get her, he'd spend his whole life convinced he could never hold on to her. She was a monster of sensuality, and if she'd stayed in her tribe, the whole north half of Dalhon would be in the midst of a decades-long civil war by now.
Every Dalhanese god and mud spirit tossed in on this one, didn't they? She's got pieces of them all. And here I thought I was dangerous. Center, she said under her breath. You have lost your mind.
Her sister heard her.
This one is far on the inside, Kiss, way farther in than anyone we know. What of it?
Cinta did not reply. Masangilani had drawn too close for any exchange now, no matter how muted. Her elongated eyes flitted between the sisters, curious and then amused.
Bitch, I hate her already.
Southerners, she said. I've always liked southerners. Your sweat smells of the jungle. And you're never as gangly and awkward as us northerners. Did you know I have to special order all my armor and clothes? I'm no standard fit anywhere, except maybe among the Fen, and that's no good because they're extinct.
Kiswe snorted.
You ain't that big.
And then she looked away as she realized how petty that sounded. But Gilani's smile had simply broadened.
The only real problem with you southerners is that you're barely passable on horseback. I'd not count on you to ride hard as me, ever. So it's a good thing you're Marines. Me, I could be either, and to be honest, I'd have jumped over to the scouts long ago.
So why didn't you? Kiswe asked. She shrugged.
Scouting's boring. Besides, I'm not interested in always being the one delivering bad news. expecting bad news? Always. And her teeth gleamed. Kissware turned away. She was done with this conversation. Cinta was welcome to it.
So, Masangilani said after a moment, Sergeant Cinta, rumor has it you're a natural, a talent. Tell me if that's true or not, since it's the only thing that brought me out here. A chance that you are, I mean. If you're not, then this meeting is over.
Listen to her, Kissware sneered. The Empress commands.
Masan blinked.
You still here? Thought you went to pick flowers.
Kissware reached for her knife, but Cinta's hand snapped out and closed on her wrist. Hissing, Kissware yielded, but her eyes remained fixed on Gilani's.
Oh, it's all so amusing to you, isn't it?
Kissware, yes? That's your name? I'll say this once. I don't know what's got the stoat in your breeches so riled, since as far as I know, I ain't never done anything to cross you. Leaves me no choice but to assume it's just some kind of bizarre bigotry. What happened? Lose a lover to a willowy northerner? Well, it wasn't me, so why not drop the hackles? Here, will this help?
And she drew out a Dalhanese wineskin.
Not wild grape from our homeland, alas.
It ain't that rice piss from Lether, is it?
No, it's Blue Rose, an Andean brew originally, or so the trader claimed.
She shrugged and held out the skin.
It's drinkable enough.
Kissware accepted the skin. She knew overtures when they arrived, and she knew that Masan had given her a way through without too much damage to her pride, so it'd be stupid not to take that path. She tugged loose the gum stopper and took a mouthful, swallowed and then gasped.
That'll do,
she said in a suddenly husky voice. Cinta finally spoke.
Everyone's claws retracted? Good. Masan, you want to know if I'm a talent? Well, not in the way of Dalhanese witches, but I've got something, I suppose.
All right. So what's that something telling you? Cinta hesitated and then reached out to intercept the wineskin. She took two deep draughts.
Aye, you're a northerner and we're not, but we're all still Dalhanese, so we understand each other. And when I say I'm going to give you something, I don't need to add that I expect something back.
Masangilani laughed, but it was not a mocking laugh. Not quite.
You just did. You've been a soldier longer than us, Cinta countered. So I was just reminding you of the ways you've maybe forgotten, or at least not used in a while. Go on, then. I get senses of things about to happen, or maybe could happen, if we don't do something to make sure they don't. You're a seer.
But Cinta shook her head.
Not so clear as that. What is about to happen to us, Sergeant? We're about to be abandoned.
Kissware joined Masangilani in regarding Cinta with alarm.
What was all this?
Sister, she said, what does that mean? Abandoned? By who? Do you mean just us, or the bone hunters?
Yes, answered Cinta. Bone hunters. All of us, the adjunct included.
Masangilani was frowning.
You're talking about the burned tears? The parish, or the Lethery escort? I'm not sure. Maybe all of them. So wherever we end up, Masan said slowly, we'll be fighting on our own. No one guarding our backs, no one on our flanks. Like that? I think so.
Masan rubbed at her neck. When Kissware offered her the skin, she shook her head.
Hard to know, Cinta, how much shit should be freezing with that, since nobody has a clue about who we'll be fighting. What if it's some noseplug savages cowering behind a bamboo palisade throwing rocks at us? We'd hardly need help knocking on that door, would we? But you know we're not heading for anything so easy, Cinta said.
Masan's lovely eyes narrowed.
This is what you want back from me? You think I've got my ear against the adjunct's tent? I know you know more than we do. And if I do, what difference would it make to you?
Kissware's breath caught as she saw her sister's hands clench into fists at her sides.
I need a reason, Masangilani. I need to know it's all worth it,
And you think what little I know can give you that? You must be desperate.
Yes, I am. Why?
Cinta's mouth shut, her jaw setting. Masangilani looked over at Kiswah as if to ask, what's her problem here? What's so hard to say? But Kiswah had no answers. Well, not satisfying ones.
My sister, she said, is a very loyal person, but she holds that loyalty in highest regard. She'll give it, I mean. But,
cut in Masangilani,
whatever or whoever she's giving it to had better be worthy of it.
Right.
I think I'm beginning to understand this. Only, Kiswah, you should look to your own feelings about that.
What do you mean?
I mean, you sounded pretty bitter right there. As if loyalty is a curse and not one you want any part of. I'd wager your sister dragged you here as much to convince you of something as to convince me.
Cinta, would that be a good guess?
That's between me and her,
Cinta replied, Kiswah glad at her sister.
All right, said Masangilani. I'll give you what little I know. What Ebron and Bottle and Deadsmell and Widdershins have put together. Maybe it'll help, maybe it won't. That's for you to decide. Here's what we think.
She paused, reached for the skin. Kiswah handed it to her. Masan drank, then squatted before them, taking the pose of the teller of tales, one they knew well, and both sisters followed suit.
He didn't ask for it, but he's been making trouble ever since. Quick Ben met him face to face. So, we worked out, did that Mekros weaponsmith with all. He's poison, and he knows it, and he can't help it, because he doesn't belong here. There are pieces of him scattered over half the world, but the biggest one is sitting in this place called Kolanz, and it's being used. We're going to kill the crippled god.
Kiswah shot her sister a wild look.
But who'd want to stop us doing that?
Cinta shook her head. Her face was wretched with confusion. Masan was eyeing them, and when she spoke, her voice was flat.
You jumped the wrong way, Cinta, like a one-eyed mongoose.
She drank again, sloshed the skin, and then scowled.
Should have brought two. We don't think we're off to kill the chained one. In fact, it's those chains we're after. Well, the adjunct, I mean. What she's after.
She lifted her head and fixed on Cinta's eyes, and then Kiswah's.
We're going to set the bastard free.
Kiswah barked a savage laugh.
No wonder they'll all abandon us, and I'm the first in line to join them.
Be quiet,
Cinta said through the hands she'd lifted to her face. She was trembling, no, shuddering, and Kiswah saw the glitter of tears trickle to the heels of her sister's palms. Masangilani's face was grave, patient. Kiswah rounded on Cinta.
You cannot! No, this is impossible! What if they're wrong? They must be. Even the adjunct's not that stupid. Every god and ascendant in the world will be coming against us, never mind those idiots in Kolanz. She's lost her mind! Our commander's insane, and there's no damned law anywhere says we have to follow her.
Cinta drew a deep breath and then lowered her hands. Something solid filled her face, as if implacable stone was replacing the soft tissues beneath her onyx skin. The bleakness drained from her eyes as they settled on Kiswah.
It will do, she said. I think, she added, nothing else would have.
What?
It is just, sister. Just.
They'll all turn on us,
Kiswah retorted.
You said so yourself.
If we do nothing, yes, they will turn on us. And what little chance we had to succeed will go with them. We need to change their minds.
How?
Asked Masangilani.
I will tell you how, said Cinta. And it begins with you, Kiswah.
I didn't say I was going to help.
You're going to desert.
What?
That's how this starts. It's the only way. Now, it's what you want, and don't tell me any different. You're deserting the Bone Hunters, and you're doing it tonight, on the fastest horse Masangilani can find you.
But Masangilani held up a staying hand.
Hold on.
I need to talk this over with...
Of course, cut in Cinta, but it changes nothing. Now, you need to hear the rest, because I need you to do the same.
Desert? Me?
Cinta nodded. But you'll ride in a different direction, Masangelani. Different from Kiswear. With luck, you'll both return.
And get hanged? No thanks, sister.
You won't. The adjunct is cold iron, the coldest there ever was. She'll work it out, fast as lightning. She'll work it out.
Then why don't we just go tell her? Asked Masangelani.
We figured it all out, but there's a problem. Only you got an idea on how to fix it.
Cinta smiled, and it was a smile that would have fitted well on the adjunct's own face.
I will do just that, once you two are gone.
She might just chase us down anyway.
She won't. I said she's quick.
So why wait until we leave?
Cinta rubbed at her face, wiping away the last of the tears.
You don't get it. She's locked in a room, a prison of her own making. In there, she hears nothing, sees nothing. In there, she is absolutely alone, and holding on with white knuckles. It's her burden, and she won't dump it on anyone else, not even her fists, not even on her high mage, though he's probably worked it out by now. She's put herself between us and the truth, but it's killing her.
So, said Masangelani, you got to show her she ain't alone, and that we're not all fools, that maybe we're ready for that truth. We not only worked it out, we're with her, there to help, whether she asks for it or not.
That's it, said Cinta.
Masangelani sighed and then flashed Kiswear a grin.
You won't surprise anyone. Me, that's a different story.
The adjunct will hint something to put your reputation square, said Cinta. Otherwise, you going might tip the balance for a whole mass of wavering soldiers in the ranks. Kiswear, well, sister, nobody will be much surprised by you, will they?
Thank you. So long as people understand I'm no coward,
Masangelani grunted.
But they'll see it that way. Nothing you can do about it either, Kiswear. We're marching to a war, and you went and ran off.
Me too. So Cinta and the adjunct work it out so it sounds like I was sent on some kind of mission.
Which is true,
cut in Cinta.
Which helps, aye. Thing is, people already thinking of maybe deserting might just take it as the perfect push. That's the risk that the adjunct might find unacceptable, no matter what you say to her, Cinta.
I'm no coward, Kiswear repeated. I'm just not one for this whole family thing. Armies ain't families, no matter how many times you try to tell me different. It's rubbish. It's the lie commanders and kings need, so they always got us ready to do shit for them.
Right, snapped Masangelani. And I guess in that snarly jungle where you grew up, you never heard any stories about what happens when armies mutiny. Kill their commanders. Depose their country's ruler. Take over. What's that got to do with the whole we're family business?
I'm saying some people run things and the rest should just stay out of it. That's all. Just like in a family. Somebody's in charge, not everybody. Usurpers never been anything better or even different from whoever they killed. Usually they make it worse. That whole family thing, it's about fighting to survive. You stand fast for kin, not strangers. Don't you get that? And the ones in charge exploit it, use us up. They ain't interested in being kin to the rest of us, and you know it.
You two, Cinta said, could go at this all night, but we don't have the time. Kiswear, since when did you care what the people you leave behind think of you? Unless, of course, you've found some pride as a bone hunter.
Do you want me to help you or not?
All right, peace then. The point is, it's only looking like you're deserting, the way Faradan Salt did outside Yagatan.
I ride south, Cinta nodded.
I go find the Perish and the Kundril.
Yes, and say what?
You convince them not to abandon us.
How in Hood's name do I do that?
Cinta's look was wry.
Try using your charms, sister.
Masangelani spoke. Sergeant, if she's going after both of them, where am I going?
That's not so easy to say, Cinta admitted haltingly.
Masan snorted. Work on that answer, Sinta. Meanwhile, let's go steal some horses.
Ah, Lieutenant, found you at last.
Master Sergeant now, sir.
Of course. And where are your charges, Master Sergeant?
Dispensed with, sir.
Excuse me?
Rather dispersed, sir. Inserted seamlessly into the ranks, not a stitch out of place.
Why, that is simply superb, Master Sergeant. You would deserve a commendation if you deserved anything. Alas, having perused the latest roster updates, I have discovered that not a single one of those recruits can be found anywhere in the army.
Yes, sir. They are well trained.
At what, Master Sergeant? Disappearing?
Well now, sir, I am reminded of a story from my youth. May I?
Please do go on.
Thank you, sir. Ah, my youth. A sudden zeal afflicted young Aramstos Paws.
Aramstos?
Yes, sir.
That's your other name?
It is indeed, sir. May I continue my tale, sir?
Proceed.
A sudden zeal, sir, to dig me a pond.
A pond?
Just behind the heap of broken bricks, sir, close to the lot's back wall. I often played there when my parents had gone from fighting with words to fighting with knives, or the hovel caught fire, as it was wont to do. On my hands and knees among the broken shards of pots and shattered dog teeth.
Dog teeth.
My father's failures with pets. But that, sir, is another story, perhaps for another time. A pond, sir. One into which I could transplant the tiny minnows I was rescuing from the fouled river down past the sewage outlets, where we used to swim on cold days, warming up, as it were, sir. Minnows, then, into my pond. Imagine my excitement.
It is suddenly vivid in my mind's eye, Master Sergeant.
Wonderful. And yet, having deposited, 50 of the tiny silver things just the day before, imagine my horror and bafflement upon returning the very next morning to find not a single minnow in my pond. Why, what had happened to them? Some voracious bird, perhaps? The old woman from down the alley who kept her hair in a net? Are there perchance now glinting minnows adorning her coiffure? Insects? Rats? Unlikely to be either of those two, as they generally made up our nightly repast at the dinner table, and so accordingly were scarce round our home. Well, sir, a mystery it was, and a mystery it remains. To this very day, and, I am certain, for the entirety of the rest of my life. 50 minnows, gone. Poof! Odd to believe, sir, and most crushing for that bright-eyed, zealous lad.
And now, if I am to understand you, Master Sergeant, once more you find yourself victimized by inexplicable mystery.
All those recruits, sir, dispersed into the ranks, and then,
poof,
as you say, and say well, sir.
Whatever happened to your pond, Master Sergeant?
Well, my pet water snake thrived for a while longer, until the pond dried up. Children have such grand dreams, don't they?
That they do, Master Sergeant, until it all goes wrong.
Indeed, sir.
Until we meet again, Master Sergeant Paws.
And a good night to you too, Captain Kindly.
It was him. I was fooling myself ever thinking otherwise. Who can explain love, anyway? She slid the knife back into its sheath and pushed through the loose flaps of the tent, stepping outside and suddenly shivering as something cold slithered through the faint breeze. The dark north flicks its tongue, echoes of some unwanted rebirth. Glad I'm not a mage. They had nothing to dance about this afternoon. Lastara moved away from the command tent. The adjunct sending her away this late at night was unusual. I was ready for bed, damn it. But having the guards roust and drive out a drunken Banaskar wasn't just sweet entertainment. It was, on another level, alarming. What did Quick Ben and Bottle tell you this night, Tavore? Is there any end to your secrets? Any breach in your wall of privacy? What's so satisfying about being alone? Your love is a ghost. The empire you served has betrayed you. Your officers have stopped talking, even to each other. Oh, serpent of the North, your tongue does not lie. Draw closer. We're barely breathing. She was forced to halt as Banaskar reeled across her path. Seeing her, he managed to stop, tottering a moment before straightening.
Captain Yill, he said genially, taking a deep breath and then letting it loose in the way that drunks did when mustering sodden thoughts. Pleasant evening, yes?
No, it's cold. I'm tired. I don't know why the adjunct cleared everyone out. It's not as if she needs the extra room. For what?
For what, indeed?
He agreed, smiling as if his purse was full of sweets.
It's the wardrobe, you see.
What? He weaved back and forth.
Wardrobe. Yes, that's the word. I think so. Not makes for easy travel, though. Doesn't, rather. But sometimes... Where was I? Oh, sometimes the wardrobe's so big, the girl... She just runs away from it, fast and long as she can. Is that what I mean? Did I say it right?
Wardrobe. Banaskar pointed at her, nodding.
Precisely.
Who runs away from a wardrobe? Girls don't do that.
But women do.
I don't understand.
All those choices, right? What to put on, and when not. If it's this, but not if it's that. What to put on, Captain Yill? Choices, surrounding you, closing in, creeping. Girl's got to run, and let's hope she makes it.
Sniffing, Lostara stepped round the fool and continued on between the tent rows. It was him, but you let him go. Maybe you thought he'd come back, or you'd just find him again. You thought you had the time. But the world's always armed, and all it takes is a misstep, a wrong decision. And suddenly you're cut. You're bleeding, bleeding right out. Suddenly he's gasping his last breaths, and it's time to put him away. Just close him up like a scroll bearing bad news. What else can you do? It was him, but he's gone, and he's not coming back. Her pace slowed. She frowned. Where am I going? Ah, that's right. New Whetstone, that's it. The world's armed, adjunct, so be careful. Kick open that wardrobe, girl, and start throwing on that armor. The days of fates are over. All those knights among the glittering smirks of privilege and entitlement. You idiot, Banaskar. There's only one item in her wardrobe. What's to choose? She almost heard him reply, and still she's running away. No, this conversation wasn't even real, and it made no sense anyway. Resuming her journey to the Smith's compound, she encountered a marine coming up the other way. A quick exchange of salutes and then passed. A sergeant, marine, Dalhanese. Where in Hood's name is she going this time of night? Never mind. Whetstone. They keep wearing out. And the sound of the iron licking back and forth, the way it just perfectly echoes the word in my head. Amazing. Perfect. It was him. It was him. It was him. Most of the ties and fittings on his armor had loosened or come undone. The heavy dragon scale breast and back plates hung askew from his broad shoulders. The clawed bosses on his knees rested on the ground as he knelt in the wet grasses. He'd pulled off the bone-strip gauntlets to better wipe the tears from his cheeks and the thick smears of snot running from his nose. The massive bone-handled battle axe rested on the ground beside him. He'd bawled through half the night until his throat was raw and his head felt packed solid with sand. Where was everyone? He was alone, and it seemed he'd been alone for years now, wandering lost on this empty land. He'd seen old camps, abandoned villages. He'd seen a valley filled with bones and rubble. He'd seen a limping crow that laughed at him only to beg for mercy when he caught it. Stupid. His heart had gone all soft, and he foolishly released it,
only to have the horrid thing start laughing at him all over again as it limped away. It only stopped laughing when the boulder landed on it. And now he missed that laughing crow and its funny hopping. At least it had been keeping him company. Stupid boulder. The day had run away and then come back, and it wasn't nearly as cold as it had been earlier. The ghost of old Hunch Arbat had blown away like dust, and was that fair? It wasn't. So he was lost, looking for something, but he'd forgotten what it was, and he wanted to be home in Letharas, having fun with King Tehol and sexing with Shur-Kelal, and breaking the arms of his fellow guards in the palace. Oh, where were all his friends? His bleary, raw eyes settled on the battle-axe, and he scowled. It wasn't even pretty, was it?
"Smash," he mumbled. "Crush. Its name is Rilk. But it never says anything. How'd it tell anybody its name? I'm alone. Everybody must be dead. Sorry, Crow. You were last other thing left alive in the whole world, and I killed you."
"Sorry I missed it," said a voice behind him. Ublala Pung climbed to his feet and turned round.
"Life!
I share your exultation, friend."
"It's all cold around you," Ublala said.
"That will pass."
"Are you a god?"
"More or less, Toblakai. Does that frighten you?" Ublala Pung shook his head.
"I've met gods before. They collect chickens."
"We possess mysterious ways indeed."
"I know."
Ublala Pung fidgeted and then said,
"I'm supposed to save the world."
The stranger cocked his head. "And here I was contemplating killing it."
"Then I'd be all alone again,"
Ublala wailed, tears springing back to his puffy eyes.
"Be at ease, Toblakai. You are reminding me that some things in this world remain worthwhile. If you would save the world, friend, that draconian armor is fine preparation, as is that weapon at your feet. Indeed, I believe I recognize both."
"I don't know," Ublala said. "I don't know where to go to save the world. I don't know anything."
"Let us journey together, then."
"Gods make good friends,"
nodded Ublala Pung, pleased at this turn of events.
"And spiteful enemies," the stranger said. "But we shall not be enemies, so that need not concern us. Wielder of Rilk, wearer of Dra Alkalaint, what is your name?"
He swelled his chest. He liked being called wielder and wearer of things.
"Ublala Pung, who are you?"
The stranger smiled.
"We will walk east, Ublala Pung. I am named Draconis."
"Oh, funny."
"What is?"
"That's the word old Hunch Arbat's ghost screamed before the black wind tore him to pieces."
"You must tell me how you came to be here, Ublala Pung."
"I'm no good with questions like that, Draconis."
The god sighed.
"Then we have found something in common, friend. Now, collect up Rilk there and permit me to refasten your straps."
"Oh, thank you. I don't like knots."
"No one does, I should think."
"But not as bad as chains, though."
The stranger's hands hesitated on the fittings and then resumed.
"True enough, friend."
Ublala Pung wiped clean his face. He felt light on his feet and the sun was coming up and, he decided, he felt good again. Everybody needs a friend.